Okay, Tori, what are we watching today?
Well, Ryan, today we are watching a documentary that both took me down memory lane and made me very scared for this year's election. That's right, we're watching Apple TV's Boy State. Boy State follows the 2018 Texas Boy State class. Sponsored by the American Legion, Boys and Girl State happens all over America every summer, coming together to build a simulated state government from the ground up. Students from all different political backgrounds are navigating the challenges of organizing political parties, consensus, and campaigning for the highest office. Today on the podcast, we have the breakout star, Renee Otero.
Awesome. Let's do this.
Let's go. Excited to have probably the standout star of Boy State on Apple TV with us today, Renee Otero. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello.
We are so excited to have you here today. You have no idea. And it's funny, I was having dinner with a former colleague right before this, and I told her that we were doing this, and she freaked out.
I mean, listen, we're not actively trying to blow smoke here, Renee, but you're easily our favorite cast member of Boy State. Yeah, I mean, before you guys filmed, you recently moved from Chicago to Texas, and were kind of thrust into a program that appeared to be the most stereotypical Texan high school boy experience I've ever seen in my entire life. At what point did you realize that you're kind of out of the bubble you grew up in and pretty much in like an alternate universe?
So I will say that through the power of editing, the documentary makes it look like I grew up in Illinois. No. I moved to Austin when I was very young. I did, however, spend large chunks of my life as much as like months at a time back home in Chicago. But absolutely, you know, walking into this space was intimidating, but, you know, nothing I wasn't unprepared for, because I have lived in or around Austin, you know, for 15, 16 years. And as rent goes up, you know what I'm saying, the wider my neighborhood gets. But what was daunting was I was going to have to do that for 7 days. Cause like, it's one thing to code switch for like a 45 minute business meeting, but for 7 days.
It's tough. I mean, I did Girl State in South Carolina. And so interestingly enough, I'm from Charleston, which was probably the most liberal of the entire state, even though it's still very much not.
Right.
And it was so interesting for me, and I'm curious to hear your kind of take on it as well. You know, we had Girl State in the middle of the state, which was very much like you have the northern part of the state, which is one way of life, and then the southern part, which is a whole different way. And we were definitely seen as like the coastal elites, like coming to Girl State. And it was very weird. And there was this pivotal moment, I'm sure there's like very much, you know, movie magic editing here, where your mom is like, this sounds very conservative. Do you want me to pick you up? And I feel like I had the same experience. So I'm just curious to hear, like, did you find that to be similar as well from everybody around Texas coming in?
I mean, yeah. I mean, people just generally hated everyone that came from Austin because they're like, ew, liberals. and I'm like, girl, I don't like them either. But like, I'm going to need you to chill out with all that. But I was just going to say that Austin, Texas is just a very unique state. As in, it's exponentially larger. Its diversity is like, you know, much less black and white, because both the Carolinas are overwhelmingly like black and white.
Yeah,
I think like North Carolina is like 55%. Like 55% of the voting registry is black. You know, so like, I think the factions were like different. You know what I'm saying? I feel like it seemed like you were having, you know, the preppy versus everyone else. Whereas it was like everyone was in their own little world, their own little community, because, you know, Texas is just kind of like that. But I will also say about my mother, you know, wanting to take me home, I think it's because it was just a big surprise for the both of us. I didn't even know what I was getting into. I was at a debate tournament when my coach pitched me the idea. And I was like, what is it? And she's like, it's an honor. And I'm like, what is it? She's like, it's an honor. And I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna go do my debate now. And so she signed me up for it. Never got a chance to like really sit down and figure out, you know, what the hell I was doing. So like my mom pulls up, she thinks it's a Seinfeld convention. Bottom white folks.
It's a lot.
I said, no, ma'am, I think that's us. So then we stand in the line and she just talking my like the ear off of how I like, you know, I'm so different from everyone. And like here's the thing. My mother went to school in the Catholic school, right? You know, after it's a Catholic school, she was like the only like black girl there. And so she was always very aware and then telling us about like how we have to be careful and how we can't let white people just talk to us any type of way. But here's what I'm going to say. I was like 80 pounds soaking wet. Like I was going to have to let them talk to me any type of way. Right. So she was right. I wanted to go home, but she said it so damn loud that people heard. And I was like, well, now I can't go home. So
to be fair, I feel like you really held down your own despite everybody seemingly to be like very harsh to you, you know, for whatever political differences you guys had. I know you didn't really live there for too long, but do you feel like the experience would have been different if it was Illinois boy state as opposed to Texas boy state?
No. Mm-mm. Racism is everywhere. Like that, and that's just the truth. And you know, I think you're right. My composure was throughout the entire experience was definitely strong. But the reason why is for one, it was just racism, right? And that made me laugh because I was like, y'all are so lame. Y'all can't come up with something else. Like, we had the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Like, y'all couldn't come up with new material, right?
Yeah.
That's my thought process when I hear racism. I'm just like, come on now. So there was that. And second, I'm the second of seven siblings. Do you think there's anything that you can say to me worse?
True. Very true.
Than my only sister or my older brother has said. Like, so like that was fine. That was fine. I was just really, the hard part is that once I got to the position of power, I knew like whatever they said didn't really like matter. But I was scared because it could have when the impeachment thing came around. That was my only real concern.
Yeah, no, and that's an interesting point. I mean, what you think was actually happening? Like, if it was race related, why would they vote for you and then suddenly pull a 180 once you did have power?
Because there's this interesting thing about being black that I kind of have to hold true to a lot of my personal politics. You know, that there was 300 hours of footage, right? And you only got 1 hour and 49 minutes. They liked me because I was speaking well, but then immediately after my speech, they said, hey, we didn't like about what you said about bipartisanship. And I was like, well, stick it, right? And so then we went to platform meetings and I kept arguing with my platform. You saw a little bit of that and they hated me. They wanted to impeach me simply because I refused to give up values. Because I, like, if this was a political simulation, I'm not gonna play politics where I'm forgotten. I don't give a damn if it's inconsequential.
Yeah.
If y'all wanna do politics, I'm gonna need you to know that black people exist. So
it's interesting because you did come off, like, from what we saw from all the edited footage in the hour and 49 minutes, like, you prioritized the process of political parties and elections almost more so than the positions on the party platforms themselves. But was it even possible to make a strategy for your party when it came off like a unanimous stance towards anti-abortion, pro-gun, and seemingly most importantly, a lot of the toxic kind of like masculinity that was definitely one of the major kind of like focal points of the entire doc?
So I think the way that I kind of leveraged that is that what people didn't understand, as badly as they treated me as the state party chair, another reason why I was so chill with it is because they didn't truly understand my powers. Anyone can say or do whatever the hell they wanted, but remember, I signed the paper off to put you in the election. And they're like, oh, I heard you call me the N-word in the bathroom. Let me throw this one in the trash, right? Like, and then they'd be like, how come I didn't show up on the election? And I'm like, oh, right? Like,
So you look up from the sweet pair of glasses you have, and suddenly they're like, "Yo, I messed with the wrong guy."
Oh yes, and it was just really that simple. However, I felt like it was what they call weapons of the week. You know, I was like playing subterfuge the entire time. I even had a queer person who was like head of rules. And so when me and him kind of like started connecting, and like, we're like, oh, okay, you cool, right? Like, he started making up a whole bunch of rules as well to make it impossible to remove me, to make it impossible for them to like get anything done without my like signature. But ultimately I could not stop the demagoguery.
I mean, it's fine because you guys have two different parties, but they literally had the same exact platform.
Absolutely.
And did they give you guys the different things you guys could discuss, or were they just like, hey, what is our platform? And everyone was just like, anti-abortion, pro-guns.
Yeah, that was literally it. That was just literally how it happened. So I knew we were going to have the same platform. The only difference was it's state party chairs.
Yeah.
And like, that's what it boiled down to. And what happens in politics when like logic, because of like the same intellectual gridlock happens, you start picking at ambiguity, as in birther attacks at Obama and Kamala Harris. They start picking at the blackness. And I simply think that that was the one thing that they could latch on, because how else are you going to win over the other side if they believe the exact same thing? You know, people still ask me, how are you certain it's a race thing? Process of elimination.
Well, also, I feel like you can only understand that through this very like nuanced experience if you are a person of color. So like, I'm half Trinidadian, he's actually half Dominican. And so, to your point, whereas like North and South Carolina is very black and white, I kind of came in as this like 17-year-old brown kid, like my white mother and my like Indian dad were like dropping me off. So it was like one of those very interesting things, but you can only understand when you're reading between the lines, because it's actually an experience that you've had to like overcome or just deal with your entire life. Whereas people who haven't had to deal with it don't understand that you can just like see through the bullshit. Like I know, and I can tell.
And like, there's this thing that me and my friend always say, only black people and women get it. When you're taught that you're the opposite of something, it's always a weird experience, right? Like, I was told I was oppressed, right? Like, I didn't know I was oppressed until like I joined debate and some white kids started telling me that Wilderson said that the suffering of blackness is ontological or something like that, right? And I was like, oh, okay, so I'm oppressed. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when every time you're in a space and you know now that you're quite literally the antithesis to what you're looking at, you start to get a little suspicious about all the actions that happen around you.
Were there kids that were coming up to you that like were quietly explaining that they don't agree with the party?
No, yeah. And that's what I said. Like, they were like, I don't agree with it. And I always said this. I said, so how come you didn't say anything in this moment? Good night.
I mean, they kind of outed Robert McDougall at the end when he was just like, by the way, I couldn't care less about abortions. I was just saying what I thought would get me to win.
I wish I can just say whatever it took to get me to win. But if I did that, I would get kicked out of my neighborhood because I couldn't afford rent.
But also, you would lack any sort of backbone or moral standing or ethical high ground or normal logic.
There you go.
And do you think that a doc like Boys State would have done so well if it were released in an era that wasn't so, you know, electrically charged right now with so many different things happening, you know, between a pandemic and an additional civil rights movement and this huge election that's going to define what America becomes? Like, do we think it would have become this huge thing had it been released in, like, 2016, or I guess 2016 is bad, 2017, whatever.
I'm about to say like, oh, well, it was released in, I mean, like, absolutely. Absolutely. I think if it was released anywhere from 2016 to 2020, it would probably be relevant. Now, I would say prior to that, I think would have been good if like TLC bought it and like made it into like a reality series, like Towers and Tiaras. Because I think that's the only way you can sell the drama of 17-year-old boys separate from the electoral climate.
It's just so interesting because, you know, obviously everybody knew we were leading into this insane election. I don't think any of us saw all of the other parts of what happened this year coming, but it was a little bit of a perfect storm, and that becomes such this microcosm of a much bigger thing and a much bigger problem, and looking at it almost a little bit from kind of where it starts. Like, it's kind of nuts when you start to dissect the connections.
Do you think the experience turned kids more onto politics or away from politics?
The thing is about boys' day is, like, it's really just supposed to be a litmus test. Mm-hmm. I think in a good society, it's required for everyone to do boys' or girls' day. You just got to figure out the way politics works for you. I walked in there wanting to be a senator because I wanted a nice little pension. I walked up out of there saying, hell no, I don't know what I was thinking. And that's what I needed. I needed to know that. That way I can figure out where to put my energy. You know, same thing that, like, Bill Clinton and Cory Booker, you know, they used this experience to figure out they wanted to go into politics. And I think they hyperfixate so much on their famous alum that they forget mm-hmm. the other half of the job that they're doing is the rest of us that realize we want to be activists, or the system is broken and we want to do this instead. And I think it's just this hyper glorification of the way that we view civic engagement as running for office and getting out to the polls rather than
doing the work.
Doing the work.
Was there any part of the overall Boys State experience that wasn't aired that you really wished they had touched on or explored a bit more?
I think it's this fact that I've seen as some moral and calm character, where in reality, I was only mature as a front. There were scenes where they had, like, a microphone pinned to me, and they said, Renee, I need you to be quiet, because, you know, if I was talking in the microphone while they were filming the other people speaking, it would catch my voice. However, I was jaded, very angry at these young men. So when they got up to speak, I got into the microphone and I said, I know that you can hear me right now, but here's what I gotta say about you. So it was footage of them just speaking, like a panorama of a whole audience, and just me cussing over it. I wish I had that, because I'd watch it for the emotional release. Mm-hmm. It was so cathartic. Mm-hmm. It's so cathartic.
You're the only person that they didn't cast ahead of going to Boys State. Mm-mm. So at what point were they just coming up to you and trying to actually get you to be one of the main characters?
Literally.
Find out later.
I didn't even know they were there. I found out after I gave that speech that you first saw me in. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they were recording me. That was literally the first time I saw them. After that speech, and that's how they met me. So they kind of just organically showed you the way we encountered each other. After that, they offered to drive me back, you know, to the lunch hall and give me a bottle of water. And I was like, in this Texas heat, you might as well have, like, given me, like, myrrh and gold.
I feel like that's quid pro quo right there. I think they gave you the bottle of water for you to be in the documentary.
Absolutely. And you know what's crazy? The heat will make you sign some crazy contracts.
Yes, it will.
I said, a bottle of water. Of course you can have my soul for the next 17 years. No, I'm playing.
What would you do to fix Boys State moving forward if you had the opportunity to fix the program?
Well, first, stop with this elite, like, bullshit. Honestly, stop with this elite bullshit. No, I stop with it. Because you know how people are looking at Texas right now through this documentary, because you're calling us the elite. Stop that. Literally stop that. Because if the elite of Texas includes 4 black people, this shit need to fall into the ocean.
Very much so.
And that means we need to make it accessible to every high school. Every high school. It genuinely needs to be a people's government. You know what I'm saying? Also, yeah. It should be a mandatory requirement. I think that everyone should have to go through, you know, Boys State. Now, I think that also has to be really careful, because, you know, it can turn into the Stanford Prison Experiment if we aren't necessarily accurate with all the facts that are presenting. But that's in a very important way for the youth to understand that, you know, there are people behind this, and people make mistakes. and you have to hold them accountable, because you may not know what you're doing at 17 years old, pulling the strings on a government, but you know what? Someone who's 47 years old and has never served office before and is just now going in is literally in the exact same boat.
Yep.
It is not an age issue. It is not an age issue.
It's a plugged-in issue. That's why you see so many of these politicians coming from families of politicians versus, you know, the new guy or gal or whoever coming in without a serious background or connectivity to politics. You rarely see that. And thank God we are seeing more and more of it now. But that's a lot from organizations that help small grassroots local campaigning that has gotten a lot of these power players into government from the last election. And, you know, we'll see what happens with this coming election, you know, with people like Jamie Harrison in South Carolina, who were all just like, please, dear Lord, get into office, you know, like, but that's, it's a lot of people now supporting the grassroots effort that I don't think existed many years ago. And that's why we have the government in which we have that is just full of political families, which comes with a whole other level of, you know, privilege and money and, once again, other topics that would take this whole conversation.
Oh, no, for real, for real. We could talk about burning the Westphalian state maybe on Wednesday, baby. I need to get the right wine for that one.
It's crazy. I mean, I definitely agree with you, too, on the changes that need to be made, because I remember walking in to Girls' Day being like, wow, did they, like, only let white people here? Like, it's very jarring. It is very, very, very jarring.
Again, this whole idea of the elite.
Yes.
Like.
They did also frame it. They framed it to us in South Carolina. It was like, if you can get into this and you're picked for this, like, it opens so many doors for you in your life. You can go to any school in the state for free. Like, you'll automatically get accepted, blah, blah, blah. Like, they definitely frame it. And I'm just like, what kind of doors could this open for other kids if it was a more equitable experience and opportunity for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Because look what it did for me. Shit. And, like, it's incredibly unfair. Incredibly unfair. Especially since, like, I mean, people keep trying to tell me, you know, but they get it from every, you know, district in Texas. But here's the thing. Gerrymandering is racist as hell. Like, if you're going to want to make, like, it's the difference between focusing on equity and then fairness, right? Like, you can't equally give every high school a chance to send two people, because if you do that, you're, like, probability wise, you're going to get only, like, white students. You need to follow the racial geographies of the place that you're representing. Otherwise, that's the one thing that's really stopping this from being a simulation and a true form of youth civic engagement.
100%. Well, with that being said, we have a final segment for every single podcast episode called Thought and Plotten. And this is your opportunity to plug or promote or share absolutely anything that you want, because there are no rules.
Okay. So, hey, y'all. You know, it's your boy Renee, paying rent. I want to let you know that I just launched an LLC called Modern Discourse, in which I'll be helping high school students with speech, as well as young professionals with professional speaking, presentations, and even practice dissertations. We also have translating services offered at a very low cost for my migrant friends, because there should be no barrier to communication, all right? Because public speaking does wonders, and it has done wonders for me. Be kind to one another. And remember, you don't know everything. So keep being curious.
That's amazing.
Love that. Well, thank you so much for being on with us today. This was such an amazing conversation, and we really thank you for your time and, you know, coming on to talk about your experience. And hopefully we can do it again.
For sure. Absolutely.
Well, this week's sign-off is an interesting one after that episode, because we have 1 week left to the election, so please make sure that you are getting out and you're voting and you're letting your voice be heard this year. As always, please make sure that you are staying safe, staying positive and testing negative. We'll catch you next time.